You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey there, I'm Captain Dean. Welcome back to another exciting episode on location once again at Mellow Matt's Music and More, where today I'm officially an employee. And so all Roseanne Cash records are 50% off.
Awesome.
Yeah. My guest is sitting right here at the table across from me, and his name is Shane Johnson.
Hey, how's it going?
It's great. How are you doing?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good.
Welcome.
Thank you, man. I'm glad to be here.
I'm having a brain moment. Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Glad to be here, man.
It was a good day for a cuddle bug. And, right. I'm feeling good. I've been an idiot all day.
Not a damn thing wrong with that.
Yeah, we will continue that. But the music's blasting. David's selling some cool CDs to this guy behind us. And it is just a hopping little moment.
Absolutely. It's the place to be, man.
Well, Shane, tell us a little bit about yourself and the music involvement on your end of things in this music scene. And we always start grand with the, where are you from?
I'm a hometown boy, man. I'm from Bowling Green.
You
were
born and raised?
Yeah. I was spent until about sixth grade, I was in Bowling Green.
Okay.
And then I went to Franklin.
Franklin. Well, of course.
Kind of been in Franklin ever since. Yeah. It's not too far away. So.
I always think of Morgantown, Bowling Green, Glasgow, Franklin,
right?
They all have like a circle.
Absolutely, you know, we all kind of know each other.
Yeah, we do, and I think it's kind of a community of its own. Even
right exactly.
Separate, you know, counties and cities, but
yeah,
they all kind of circle around this town.
Yeah,
but for some reason, those three seem to be the hotbed.
Yeah.
Of where other musicians come from, where other bands seem to.
Yeah.
Form and call home and things of that nature.
It's pretty awesome, man. I mean, Franklin's a tiny little town, but you'd be really surprised how many it's growing.
It's
growing fast. You know, and about 20 years ago, it was much smaller than it is now.
I lived there 20 years ago because I was working in Nashville and my wife still worked here.
Right.
And so when we got married, we lived in Franklin.
Yeah.
It made perfect sense. We were halfway from each destination.
Yeah.
So she drove up here in the morning and I drove down there in the morning. And so we lived there, but we didn't really do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
We lived there. Right. I mowed the yard.
Not a whole lot to do there anyway.
And then I would go to work. If we went out or we went in to eat or something, we always came to Bowling Green in Nashville.
Yeah.
And that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So it was very small.
Yeah, back then you probably had maybe two options of where to go eat.
Before the Lowe's.
Yeah.
The new Walmart was literally brand new.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of that stuff. But
that was a good time, man. I was there right before all that happened. So I remember when it was kind of like Mayberry. And,
it was very much like
very close to it. Really friendly. And
the square was still kind of a ghost town at that
time. Yeah, absolutely.
But it looks great now. They've done a great job of preserving a lot of those buildings and the Johnny and June marriage marker
man,
in front
yeah.
of the church where they got married at. That was great.
Absolutely.
And I know that was a big concert, which as we're taping this wasn't about a year or so ago.
Yeah.
But Franklin's grown.
Yeah, man, there's a lot of music there too. That's
proud.
What
all the surrounding counties now are wet.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's a good sign of moving into the
That was a long time coming in Franklin, man. I mean, it took a while, but they finally came around.
But what I've noticed with that is the music scene as a whole has grown.
Absolutely.
Because now there's venues in these small towns that aren't all-age pizza parlors and
exactly
you know what I mean, like you would get a band but they would have to play on the square,
right?
Or it was like a hamburger joint, which isn't a bad thing.
No, I played a few of those myself.
You've got the diversity of being able to do shows in a bar and still have the all-age shows on the square and things
exactly
of that nature, and it's all good.
Yeah. So every bit of
congratulations, Franklin.
A long way coming, man. I'm telling you, it's when I think about how it was 20 years from now, then it seemed like there was no music at all then. And
no,
there's
quite
a bit
of
now.
Bands there. I saw a lot. My brother's band used to be based there. They would rehearse constantly in the old elementary school.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like a workout place now.
The fitness center.
Yeah, they used to practice on the second floor.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time.
I've seen a few shows there, man.
90s.
I saw Commander there years
they
and years ago.
They have a lot of good shows there.
I think we played a wedding reception there, as a matter of fact.
That's crazy.
Yeah. A lot of good music there.
That's funny. But Franklin has a lot to involvement with our music scene. And but you're from here, and you live there. So
absolutely.
You're still kind of in between.
I've always had, you know, a lot of music friends from Bowling Green that kind of kept me semi-connected to what was going on in the music scene around here. You know, it's, I mean, everybody in Franklin, at least, you know, back when we started playing in Franklin, I mean, you really didn't have a lot of options to play there.
Right.
So you pretty much had to come to Bowling Green to play.
But there was
so.
A lot of, like, again, the fitness center and other things. There were like warehouses and people would practice and various things.
And it was always a really big deal when those happened because it seemed like such a rare
all
thing.
Yeah, the cool kids would come watch. Exactly. Because it was something to do, you know. But being from here and being raised and musically connected, first of all, when did you get into music and discover your knack for it and what led you into like your first band and jamming with people?
Well, I think it was pretty much my whole life. My dad has been a life, you know, a pretty much professional musician.
Oh, really?
So, you know, he was on tour when I was a little kid with the Dixieland band. And
get out of here.
Yeah, yeah. So I've watched him play my whole life, and
you know,
I've always had guitars around
you,
the house.
But I don't know a lot about your like personal story and stuff.
Well, my dad is, you know,
he's didn't know that.
I mean, he really could be considered kind of a small time legend in Bowling Green because he's been in so many bands. And I can remember being a small child and going to watch rehearsals with my dad.
Like what?
And the Screamers was one. He was in a band called the Screamers with Chris Carmichael and Jeff Haar. And
I definitely know
a couple of guys.
I don't recall that name though. But this is before yours and my time.
Right, right.
So
yeah, I was a little bitty then. I think I was 5 or 6 watching them rehearse and about 95.
Okay,
or 85. Excuse me,
85.
Yeah,
I was gonna say.
I'm a little older than that, but yeah.
You look great.
Thank you, man. But no, I think it was maybe, I was probably 8 years old when I finally talked my dad into giving me some pointers on guitar.
Okay.
Guitar was always my first love, I guess, from watching him do it. And then, the few people that he exposed me to when I was really young.
Did it come natural to you?
Yeah, I would say, it definitely took some serious dedication to be where I wanted to be. Watching my dad be as good as he was, that's what I wanted to be. I didn't want to be...
But you spent a lot of time in the wings of shows, practice.
Absolutely.
And just watching him at home.
All the people he was playing with. I mean, all the bands that... They all had other bands going on. You know, Chris Carmichael had the 15 Strings thing going on, those guys were just incredible.
Well, he had a bunch of bands going on, but he was also like a constant called up session guy.
It was a busy guy.
Super busy. But yet, in his line of work, it's a good place to be.
Right.
So that's cool for that connection alone because everybody knows Carmichael and all the great stuff he's done. And
of course, for that reason, I always had a lot of support. As soon as I kind of made it, they all kind of knew that I was going to be a musician. Mm-hmm. But whenever I made it a reality, then had a lot of support. And, they always helped me.
Eight?
Yeah.
When you kind of like
I just started learning guitar. And, I didn't really, I wasn't until maybe 12 or 13 before I really took it seriously and started. Okay. I think the first band that I was in was when I was 13.
Great. So what was it?
It was called Flat Rock.
Flat Rock?
Yeah.
And was
I have no idea. I think that was based on like some kind of landmark in Franklin or something. I wasn't really part of the name.
Was it in Franklin or was it here?
In Franklin, There's a couple of friends of mine. Hunter Colson, the guy that I currently play music with. We've been best friends for maybe, over 25 years.
That's cool.
He was 11 at the time. So, 11-year-old. Bass player in a band, so we were all like, we always felt like we were the coolest kids in school.
Right. You were.
I'm sure they probably didn't think so, but we felt
no,
like
you
we were.
It's pretty obvious you were.
I appreciate it. But really, with those guys, we did a couple of different bands in that era of the early 90s where we did, we're mostly doing like Metallica covers and Black Sabbath covers.
So did you play out much or just practice?
I think our first show was a middle school dance that we played. And that was, the crowd did not like what we were doing at all.
See, I had a totally different reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
The kids were actually glad that she stopped playing Vanilla Ice and let my shitty punk rock band play.
I think those people that were watching us would have been really happy if they had put on some MC Hammer or something.
Yeah, they were
totally But, even in saying that, considering... we didn't get the best reception. We still really enjoyed it, and it
you
felt like we were
experience.
Finally doing something.
And
playing in front of people, and
that's one of those things that it puts you on the path.
Right, exactly.
And you either jump off because you feel dumb, or you keep going because you're like, "Well, I enjoyed it, so I'm going to keep trying and make it better."
Exactly.
So, of course, there's always the fork in the road depending on your age and how the experience goes.
And I did forget to mention that those first probably 3 or 4 bands that I was in, I was the drummer. I played drums.
Came out as a drummer.
Yeah, actually, I'm sure my dad wasn't happy about that after all the years he'd spent teaching me guitar that I abandoned guitar shortly.
I learned like all three at the same time.
Right.
I was playing drums. And I had a bass, and I had a guitar, and it was like, at one point when I was like 15, I made the decision, I'm going to play drums, I seem better at that.
Drums is really fun, man. I mean, it's
they are fun. It's a really fun instrument. I just seem better at that. My fingers are short, and
right.
I wasn't a great guitar player. I could play rhythm and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a toss up between like bass, rhythm guitar, and drums. I was like, I'm a pretty decent drummer. I'll just go with that.
Yeah.
So I'm in that boat too, where it was like I had to make the choice.
Exactly.
It wasn't like it was made for me.
Yeah.
And I meet a lot of great guitar players, and that's all they know how to do.
Right.
They don't know how to play drums,
yeah.
But they have a good sense of rhythm. They just cannot sit behind a drum kit and carry a tune.
Yeah.
You know? But, so yeah, I can relate to you on that.
Well, I've always loved it, man. I mean, I think it's been many, many years since I've played drums in a band, but mm-hmm. I still, anytime I can get behind a drum set and just fiddle around with it, I really yeah. enjoy it. It's just it's a fun cool. instrument.
It is fun. It really is. I mean, you just beat on them and
right.
have a good time. It doesn't have to be anything grand,
right?
It yeah. can just be noise.
Yeah,
but to be a good heartbeat of a band, obviously it takes skill, and
that's a good feeling too. When yeah. you know, when you locked in with a good bass player.
Oh yeah,
and, I mean that's a nice feeling.
It's hard to beat that at all.
Yeah.
So you're talking about your entire what, junior high, high school?
Yeah, I think
years.
It was pretty much from '93 to maybe '97.
Okay,
I was strictly drums, and then me and a few friends from high school when we were in marching band together. We kind of got into the punk rock scene, and
great.
That's when I went on to play guitar. That's my first band I was ever in a guitar player in. It was called Phallogistics.
Nice.
And it was me and a couple guys from school, Jordan Boyer and Emil Bailey and Brandon Sharon.
Okay.
And we did, we were into NoFX was a big deal to us
oh,
back
yeah.
then. You know, we were really into NoFX,
yep.
and there was a couple of... Bad Religion was a big one.
So you really picked up on the Epitaph, Southern California kind of
absolutely.
Vibe. Okay.
And that was a big influence.
It was a big deal.
Yeah.
I think some people missed... It wasn't on everyone's radar.
Yeah.
Because other things were bigger.
Right.
Like Green Day and
yeah.
All that stuff. We had already gone through the grunge phase.
But yeah.
there was this underground thing going on that you either caught wind of it or you didn't.
Yeah.
These guys were not pretty by any means. No, so they were not on the front cover
not
of
at
magazines.
All.
You had to... They were in Rolling Stone, but very small
right.
print.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was like I caught a lot of that stuff on late night TV.
Yeah.
Or like a friend of mine and I were talking the other day about Thrasher magazine was really good about featuring music.
Absolutely.
And I think they were in cahoots with some of those labels that were tapped into the generation of what
yeah.
was going on, not just in skate culture, but
right.
music in general that fit in with the generation of teenagers
yeah,
at that
exactly.
moment, which would have been the mid to late 90s.
Right.
And those bands played a big role.
Having that kind of scene in Franklin, I mean, at that point, it's always been a really small town.
Yeah.
And not to call out anyone in the school system of Franklin, but they weren't exactly, they didn't
always,
love the skate crew.
No,
so,
Because they don't relate to it.
Exactly.
And that's the thing I learned many years ago is
yeah.
the reason why me and a few at Warren East stood out is
right.
because we were the ones listening to this music and everyone else was listening to Top 40 or
yeah.
mostly country music
yeah.
people of the time, Alan Jackson and all that
oh,
stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they couldn't understand
no,
any
no,
of that.
No.
Like, Tool,
yeah.
Rage Against the Machine. It was very frowned upon
yeah.
to a point.
Yeah.
But now they all look back going, man, those are great
yeah.
bands. It's like a nostalgia thing for them.
And it does give you a sense of,
it at the time.
I do have a sense of pride.
But it's not cool then.
Knowing that I was, really into that kind of stuff when the kids around me were really not into it and always felt like, individualistic, I guess, because of that. Because I had my little small group of friends.
And that made you who you are.
Exactly.
And kind of a sense of originality in
yeah.
yourself of you weren't a cookie cutter.
Yeah.
You weren't like all the other kids. So
exactly.
That's something to be proud of, especially from the Franklin area.
Yeah. And it was always really fun to, we always had a group of friends that would come to the few shows we played with the little punk rock band we did, but there was always those people like the neighbors, whoever of the house that we played that just despised it. And when
that's
you're a teenager,
noise to them.
It's always gratifying to piss someone off with your music because, we were at teenage angst
the true
modes of our lives.
Band.
So, exactly.
You're doing exactly what you're supposed to
so
do.
So, after those shows, when the police were telling us we got to stop, we'd walk away feeling like we'd really accomplished something.
Yeah,
got shut
true.
Down. So,
that's true.
That was pretty cool, man.
And now you can reflect on it now.
Exactly.
And be like, yeah.
Yeah.
Look what I did. So, again, this is all through middle school, high school era of your
right.
life. And you're still in Franklin.
Yeah.
Right? Did you ever get an opportunity in Bowling Green or any surrounding area to do like a club show or any kind of all-age venue kind of thing?
Not with those early groups. I think we did after I got reconnected with Hunter Coulson, who I'd started playing with when he was 11. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was playing drums at the time, and then we just found out years later that we had a really good connection on guitar and bass.
Okay.
So I was, you know, I'd been in maybe two bands playing guitar at that point, and we started a band called Ugly Mugs. With Chris Biggs on drums. And Ugly Mugs with two G's. We thought that was really cool. But that's really when the first band I've ever played with that we did a lot of Bowling Green stuff.
And, Where'd you play?
We played, what was that coffee shop that I'm drawing a blank on?
The one on Main Street?
On Square.
Spencer's?
No,
the one on
Java
Main
House.
Street.
Java House. We played there a bunch. So I don't
Java
know if
House
count that
now,
as...
is the building's still there, but it's just a few doors over from where the Little Fox Bakery is.
Yeah.
Little Fox Bakery is kind of in the middle of that spot, and Java House was the last building on the end before that little parking lot.
Right.
So it's still there.
Yeah.
But I too, played there quite a bit in the late 90s and early 2000s, and... Man, that was an awesome place.
Man,
I mean, I don't know who ran it. I don't know who even booked the shows, but I missed stuff like that.
Yeah. I was so used to playing places where, you know, usually you don't have a crowd that's really engaged in what you're doing. They're more kind of just socializing and talking over your music. And
of
then,
course.
You know, every time we played the Java House, it always felt like
there's one
people
guy
really paying attention.
Playing Atari on the little TV.
Yeah, man.
And
I
then everybody
that.
Else is actually drinking coffee and looking at
you
and
paying
applauding.
Really close
and
attention.
It was weird. It was like, wow, this is what a concert's like.
Exactly.
People actually care about the music.
Well, we kind of graduated that band into Black Market Peep Show was what the
See,
last...
I've never heard of any of these names.
That was the first...
Super underground.
My first Tidball show
was
with Black Market Peep Show.
Of course, Tidball's opened in 2001.
Right.
So what year was this around?
This was probably 2006 or 7, maybe. And we did... we opened up for... Double Zero and Valjav.
Very good.
So
that's awesome.
And of course, that was the I'd known Shelby for a few years before that, but that was my first time seeing Valjav live, and those guys just
so you saw him live for the first time and got to open for him.
Yeah.
Now that is a great introduction.
I'll never forget it, man. It was pretty wonderful.
That is very cool.
And we did. I think we did maybe five or six more at Tidballs after that.
That's cool.
I love playing that place, man.
So did you guys? That being like your first real kind of band that's involved in a way.
Yeah.
Did you all ever record and release anything?
We actually did we were planning on doing much more of a full-length recording, but we did a four-song demo with a friend of mine named James Pearson, who had a home studio.
Yeah.
And that turned out really great. I mean, cool.
Is it available anywhere?
There's a few copies floating around.
Is it online or anything?
I'm not sure. I don't think
Once
we ever did put it online.
You're going to have to make sure.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. People are going to want to hear that.
We're actually trying to reunite at the moment.
I'll do like a reunion show.
Our drummer moved away to, he got married and moved.
Uh-huh.
And that was about 10 years ago.
Okay.
And then, of course, he's moved back recently.
Hey.
And I think we've been talking pretty heavily about trying to get
if you can do
going
it,
again.
Do it.
So.
Because that's a cool thing. A lot of bands have done it recently, and I think it's great.
I love it, man. I mean, especially, I've been with a lot of musicians, and I've always had a connection with everyone, but those two guys, I've always felt like that was a real...
It's like home.
You know,
we'd
never have to think too hard about what we're doing.
That's
it's just,
great.
You know, we get in the room together, and we all kind of have the same idea.
It's a shame it had to come to an end, but that's, unfortunately, just life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's part of it, man.
So you're saying 2006 is about that time.
Right.
How long did this band go for? And
I would say probably 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
And then
what did you do after that?
I went for a while without really doing much outside of playing in my living room, you know, just writing a lot. And
just kind of.
I did a few solo deals.
Doing your own thing.
A solo record. And I think it was right before Black Market Peep Show 2001 that we did. I did a solo record called The Elegant Slouch.
Nice.
With a friend of mine. And I always took a lot of pride in that because I'd played a lot of instruments on it. And, you know, I pretty much did the whole thing by myself, which was
kind of
a dream that I wanted to do.
Yeah, going back to the beginning, you were saying you were playing drums and then you took up guitar and vocals and singing and writing.
Yeah.
So what else are you in? Like, what else
after
are
that,
you talented
after,
at?
I guess it was probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 years after Black Market Peep Show disbanded, we started a little folk group, me and Hunter and his brother and a guy named Alan Binion. We did a band called the Boat Voting Dragon Chasers. which is a long story behind that name. You probably have to ask one of them to give you the detailed story.
You know,
but
it's your episode, yeah. So feel free to go into it.
We don't, I mean, every band I've been in with Hunter, he always has... I've got notebooks full of just like lists of random band names, and you know, there's some of them are really out there. Yeah. I would never consider using them, but just to not offend too many people. But
true,
that was the one that we just, you know, we thought it was the oddest sounding combination of words ever.
It's odd and it's good. It's actually good. It sounds good.
Had a slight drug reference to it, yeah. So we thought that was kind of cool. So
good selling point.
And that was a fun thing to do. Like, you know, I'm so used to playing where you have to lug around a bunch of heavy gear, mm-hmm. and you know, not that I mind doing that, but
no, it's just
it doing the
nice.
Folk it's acoustic nice thing. You know, we could have rehearsals without plugging anything up. You know,
right.
we could stand out on the street and play, you know, and sound just like we did
right.
on recordings or anything.
But you're to go back again though. You're drumming, you're playing guitar, and like and now this, like,
yeah.
What are you in, like, instrument wise? Like, are you just all over the map? Can you play just about everything?
I played predominantly mandolin in that band, so that's the first time that I ever picked up the mandolin and tried to do, you know, more of like
just
folk type musician
picked it up and
stuff,
winged it, huh?
You know, and I wasn't, I think if any, you know, traditional mandolin player ever heard my playing on that stuff, they would be appalled.
but you learned how to play it your way,
right? And it was more like
I don't see
it was kind of like
transposing
guitar style to mm-hmm. mandolin. It was more of a rock style mandolin.
I don't see anything
thing.
Wrong with that though.
It was really fun, and
yeah.
we seemed to
Because
we got a good response from
you built
the people
something
that heard us.
Original,
right?
And you're a skilled guitar player, so therefore you just kind of developed your own way of
right.
coming up with riffs and melodies and things to go with songs that you're writing.
Yeah.
So it's not like you needed to be a proper mandolin player.
Right.
You played it the way you wanted to play.
I mean,
it.
And it felt good. That's yeah. you know,
and that's what matters.
Every band that I play in, that's, you know, if I'm not having a good time, then there's no reason to do it. So
yeah, I love,
you know,
that.
I love the idea of just, you know, the, I think it's. Being a songwriter in this age, it's kind mm-hmm. of hard to write an original idea because everything, every you know, every combination of chords has been used
it
at
seems
some
like,
point.
And,
so.
And as we sit here in the year of 2020, how can you look back to music for 100 years at
yeah.
this point and not say that band sounds like this band or
exactly.
that riff sounds like that riff? I mean, it's unavoidable at this point.
Right.
Everything's been done. And if something is new and original, it's so odd that your brain can't comprehend it.
Right. Yeah.
So it's kind of weird that yeah. if you try to reinvent the wheel at this point, it's going to be like, is it noise or is
yeah.
it just such an oddity thing
right.
that you just hit there and hit the C over and over
yeah,
again
yeah.
and scream like Yoko Ono? I mean, is that really music and art?
Well, I always tried to, I mean, I was really bad about, you know, kind of writing a song and then not using it because it sounded too much like something else.
Right.
And then I got into a habit where I was, you know, kind of getting rid of too many songs because I was being too hard on them. So I just decided to, especially with the going to mandolin thing, I mean, we
right.
had a lot of songs that you could easily go back and name 50 traditional bluegrass songs that we were stealing, you know, ideas from.
That's true.
But at the same time, you know, it didn't sound exactly like it, and it was enough
right.
our own flavor that it didn't
well,
feel
again,
like.
It's like the alphabet. There's only so many letters and so
right.
many notes and so many chords, and so
yeah.
it's not like this infinity of,
yeah.
you know. Now, pedals and shit can help you achieve
yeah.
noise and sounds
yeah.
of, you know, craziness and open the gates of
right.
hell and, open, you know, do whatever you want. But it's you're still limited
right.
because of what's in front of you. So you got to work with what's acceptable or,
exactly.
you know, what's offered in your hands, you know.
Yeah. And
the
I think being a younger musician,
from brain,
you know,
to fingertip is...
At least from my standpoint, I always, you know, I didn't necessarily want to do, like, play super flashy things all the time. But
right.
I wanted to do, you know, things that sounded original. So
yeah.
I would be a little
well,
harder
like,
on myself than I should have been, I guess.
There's... making something cool that people go, hey, that's really cool.
Yeah.
But then there's the side of it that's personal satisfaction.
Right, exactly.
You don't give a shit what anybody thinks
exactly.
about it. It's like, I like it.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of that song.
That's the most
so
important, man.
It is the most important.
But the older I get, you know, that's the
you
more
see
that
more.
That really
I do too.
Hits home when I write something and I kind of feel
that's
like.
That's why I'm doing what I do now. People ask
like
me
something.
About how much money do you want to play this gig? And I'm like,
whatever.
I don't care. If you're
money,
gonna let
I
me
guess.
Walk in your building and scream into a
right.
microphone 10 songs I wrote,
Yeah. Like, should I pay you money. Maybe? Or like, you know,
if I'm playing drums in a cover band for four sets, $100 flat. Yeah, that's, like, that's I'm not going to play that shit for free, you know. But to play originals and stuff, that I draw the line.
Yeah.
There is a fence, and there's two sides of what's on it, and that's exactly. That's my opinion.
I agree with you, man, 100%.
So that's cool. You know, how long did that band last for?
That was probably 3 years, maybe three, okay. 4 years.
Decent amount of time. Yeah.
And then I think I did
you
another...
You seemed like from the beginning of your taking off and getting into bands that are working and gigging, and and then you get up to Bowling Green and start playing the club scene. It doesn't seem like you have a lot of downtime aside from you saying in between bands you were writing and playing in your living room.
Right.
But you didn't put it in the closet for 2 years.
No, never.
Like,
never.
You consistently have been on the path
always,
of work.
Man. Yeah.
But you were reinventing things after one band comes to an end and then this one starts right. up. And they are kind of polar opposite from each other.
Exactly.
But yet it's still an extension of you, your art form, and your music.
And that was always based on, I mean, I think, you know, I've been through a pretty broad range of styles in bands that I've been in. And that's
cool.
Always, you know, reminiscent of what I'm listening to
right.
at the time. You know,
well, what have you listened to over all these years? Like, do you have any main influences?
Or? I mean...
Look at to the most, and
I was blessed to be a teenager during the grunge era. I think that was a great time
to
be a budding musician because yes. you know there's a lot of, you know, obviously I think anyone that was a young guitar player at that point mm-hmm. in their life could never say that Kurt Cobain wasn't a huge influence. I mean,
right.
I was
and
really
the generation
into
before them was
really into Pearl Jam,
pointing
and,
at you know the '80s guys that were hairspray and flashy, but still
right.
There's some good stuff there, you know.
And at the same time, my dad was pumping me full of 70s
right.
rock. You know, I was really into Hendrix and
so you were schooled
Zeppelin
heavily
on I think the first tapes stuff. My dad ever gave me when I was maybe 9 or 10 was Buddy Holly.
Oh wow.
And Elvis Costello.
So he didn't mess around.
So, you know, he was giving me good stuff
broad
from my early age
too.
To rob, you know, trying really hard to keep me out of
right.
being an MC Hammer fan, I guess, you know.
Yay!
No, he never bought me a Boyz II Men CD or anything, you know.
That's good. I was
worried
if your Color Me Bad CD right. still worked or not.
Don't get me wrong. You know, I had a couple of those, and I won't admit any names here on this
sure.
podcast, but, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was a victim of, you know, trying to listen to what was popular, but I never played that stuff. That's one thing I can be proud of.
If it's catchy and you can dance to
right?
it, you gotta go for it.
And, you know, there's some cute girl at school that is listening to some band, and you want to pretend like you're into
pretend
them.
Pretend like.
Even though you're not
exactly.
really, you know, it's all
luckily I did
part
it.
Of being young and, you know, just going along with whatever makes you not too unpopular.
Yep.
I was pretty bad about that. Wasn't super liked in school, so I had to do what I could to make friends.
You know, somebody had to do it.
Exactly.
So where do you go from the ending of this band that you are playing mandolin and doing like a folky, like Americana type
right.
style thing? What age are you at that point, and where do you go from there?
I was early 20s when we kind of disbanded doing that,
okay.
and I did the solo thing again for maybe a year or so,
mm-hmm.
a year or two. And then I joined a band called Marshall Love with a couple of guys
nice.
That I went to school with. And they did like we were really heavily influenced by like King Crimson and kind of prog rock type stuff. So we, you know, I was expanding how much.
So you took a lot of
guitar
mushrooms.
Parts I was playing were much more complicated than the first few bands that I was in. You know,
make a mushroom sandwich.
Exactly.
And just see what happens.
Right. That's a great time too. Like, you know, to get to that where
you
try to take it through the simple rock music and
mm-hmm.
dig a little deeper.
Yep.
Now, I didn't do that for too long, but you know, we had maybe 3 years.
I think
being
it's
in that
important
band,
if some people go through that.
You know, it's good to experience that. I think it expands your creativity
it's
a little
cool
bit.
It's cool to experience it, and then you forget all about it,
and not not make it a lifestyle.
Like you never went through.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I try. There's a lot of those days I could not remember by choice.
Of course.
But you know,
mushrooms.
Yeah.
They're not good. It tastes like shit.
Not good.
How long did that last? And did you all do
years.
Anything?
We recorded a record in Nashville.
Oh wow!
And you know, we didn't. You're
a Nashville
I don't think we
recording artist.
We made the foolhardy mistake of taking it to Nashville and just going, walking into record labels and just like, here, check out our stuff. And most of them were country labels anyway,
so
they wouldn't even listen to it.
Of
but
course.
We kind of got laughed out of a few places and then just went back to the garage and.
Yeah, Nashville's a funny place.
Yeah, it's not really easy to...
We should all be laughing at
to get
them.
Someone to listen to you in Nashville.
No, it's not. It's totally different now than it was in the heyday or whatever, but it's weird.
I never really tried too hard with Nashville, though, because I think...
Corporate music.
You know, we did... Black Market Peep Show played Nashville a few times, mm-hmm. and it always felt like... we played the Muse maybe four times, and for some reason, you know, Black Market Peep Show was kind of a... People told me a lot that we were really heavily influenced by the Chili Peppers, because that's, you know, it was really funky rock type sound, so, I mean, I hate to say, going back to... trying to not steal other people's riffs, but I can go back and listen to the Peep Show now, and John Frusciante influenced me pretty heavily on my guitar writing when I really started to write a lot.
He's brilliant.
I mean, that guy, you know, there's a lot of Chili Peppers records.
He's the modern day Jimi Hendrix.
Absolutely.
Like, if you break down the thing about guitar heroes, and you start in the 60s with, say, Clapton, and then the 70s would be, late 60s, early 70s, you've got Hendrix, which goes into Jimmy Page, and of course Eddie Van Halen at the end of that.
Right.
And then the 80s is dominated by a lot of great people.
Yeah.
I point to Frusciante as the one that was next.
Yeah.
But he was almost like the dark horse, because Mother's Milk didn't show a lot.
Right.
It was good.
Yeah.
But then
Blood Sugar was really the one.
Blood Sugar came out in 91, and of course that at that point the Chili Peppers get shucked into the grunge movement, which wasn't a bad thing for them, but it was like, well, that doesn't really fit.
Yeah, you know, out of place.
Yeah, they're from L.A. and they came out in the 80s, and so I mean, but it was cool for them to do that. But yeah, as a guitar player, yes.
And that album, for me, was...
To me, he's the modern-day Jimi Hendrix.
Blood Sugar Sex Magik was a really life-changing thing for me as far as...
You and me both, yeah.
I always heard lead guitar from the Hendrix perspective, mm-hmm. and I always thought Frusciante approached it in a really fresh way.
Yep.
You know, I think even
and very original.
You know, when he came back with Californication and the Stadium Arcadium and all that, I mean, he's still got that...
Well, there's
his own sound.
There's
lead
great
guitar.
Stuff. The man, I mean, everything he's ever done is phenomenal. As we're taping this, it wasn't that long ago they announced he was back in the band.
Absolutely, which
so
is pretty exciting.
I think in the year 2020, there will be new Peppers with Frusciante, and I'm thrilled to death. But I look at it also in a strange way, like Crying Wolf.
Right.
Like, how many times are you...
This is like the fourth time that he's left.
I mean, they're all they're getting up there in age, so I'm hoping this is their way of saying, just come back, and we'll ride this out until we're too old to do it anymore.
Maybe do one more,
and then
maybe two more albums.
We'll actually retire.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping this is the final phase of the band, because good Lord,
it should be. I mean...
They're getting old.
Yeah. And those last two, I mean, I think Josh Klinghoffer was a
I
really
loved
great
him.
Replacement.
I
think
I
he's
saw
a great guitar
on that
player.
Tour, the tour with him on the first one.
Yeah.
And I was really... I dug it.
I mean, he's
liked
a great
what he did.
Player.
But there's a song on the Stadium Arcadium record.
Yeah.
The last Frusciante record. A song called Ready Made.
Yeah, I love that
The
song,
guitar
man.
Solo on that song hurt my head when I first heard it. And this is why I don't play guitar at all. I can't do leads.
Right.
But that's just me. But out of everything I've ever heard... of Frusciante's guitar playing ability and his lead work, that song is on the pedestal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nothing can touch it.
Well, I think the last time that I saw the Chili Peppers was probably, it was right before he left this last time. You know, they were doing Stadium Arcadium
tour. Yeah,
that
tour. They came through Nashville.
And that song live was really, really
All my
really
friends
incredible.
Went to see it, and I didn't go.
Yeah.
And then he quit, and I'm like, shit.
I had a few chances to see them when they were touring with Klinghoffer, and I just never... I think it was just ticket price issue.
Probably.
You know,
but I saw him in Louisville with him, but luckily I saw him with Frusciante on Californication.
Yeah.
I saw him twice.
I would love to see that tour.
Fantastic.
I'm sure it was incredible.
I was so happy. Because at that point, you didn't... You know, the whole story of how he came back and everything.
Yeah.
You're staring at that band on stage thinking, I never thought 10 years ago I would have seen this.
Yeah.
Because we all thought he was going to die.
I mean, he definitely...
Or he just
he
disappeared.
Got close to
you know,
it.
He definitely did.
He seemed
but
pretty
that was,
there for a
that
while.
That was a wonderful moment.
Yeah.
The 15-year-old in me was just bouncing off the walls
exactly.
to be able to see the four of them on stage together.
Yeah.
So I relate to you on that.
And both the shows I saw with them was, I think... two of the oddest opening acts. Like the first time we saw them, they had Gnarls Barkley open up for them.
That's weird.
And that was really strange.
They're known for that, though.
Yeah.
They usually get some oddity LA band that no one's heard of or might have a small hit, but nothing major comes of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is an odd pairing.
Yeah, the second time was the Mars Volta opened up for them.
Oh, that's not bad.
And of course, I always wanted to see the Mars Volta live anyway.
Well, that's a good. That's a good pairing.
Seeing that, I don't know. I guess it was probably 100% Chili Peppers fans in that crowd. So you got Mars Volta up there doing some bizarre.
You were the
jams,
only one.
And I mean, everybody was probably really waiting for the Chili Peppers to get out there and play some songs they recognized. Yeah. But I really personally enjoyed the Mars Volta show.
I get that.
And those guys are.
I agree.
Band,
I mean,
I think,
I'm
know,
not super knowledgeable about them, but from what I've heard of them, it's pretty good. So
I guess I saw them twice. I saw them once with System of a Down also, that was a pretty great show.
Weird.
Yeah.
They can fit in with
another
anything.
Odd mix of music.
Yeah.
But that was right before System stopped playing also, so that was a really strange show.
Yeah, I don't know much about them.
The tension
between
them
was that one
obvious
song.
On stage.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just released the, what was it, Hypnotize and... whatever. Those last two records they did, but they weren't.
I know the one song.
You could tell that the singer wasn't a big fan of doing those songs. So
really?
It was, it's pretty weird to see a band kind of, you know, internally fall apart in front
stage.
Of a large audience. It was pretty bizarre.
Yeah. We're out here because we don't want to get sued.
We're under some contractual obligation to be here and not really happy about it.
Yeah, unfortunately. There's the music business.
That's one thing I'm really happy that, you know, obviously it's always been a dream to do it as a career and make money playing music. But at the same time, being
lightning in a bottle
where I'm at now and, you know, married with two children and working a steady job, I still have my sanity and I feel like I haven't given up any kind of creative control over anything. It's all.
It's always been there.
Yeah.
And you've always been doing it. So, of course, I think with age, I just kind of accepted it.
Yeah.
Like, well, I'm old now, so it's too late for anything and whatever.
So it's all
for
fun
still,
now.
I can still, it's totally for fun. Yeah. And I wish I had that mentality when I was about 28.
That would have been nice.
It would have been great.
I would have been the same way, man.
Like, you know, the whole thing of learning lessons of if I'd known now what I knew then.
Right.
You know, all that stuff. But the fact that we both are the type of, that just never put it away. I've met so many people that are brilliant musicians. They're in bands just like you and I did through high school and getting in their early 20s, and they're playing big cities and going on the road and all this great shit.
Yeah.
And then they're like,
yeah.
I got married. I put it down. I just set my guitar in the stand in the corner of the room.
Yeah.
And then about 10 years go by, and they're like, oh, I really want to play again.
Right.
And it's like, well, I'm busy because I never stopped, you know. And I've run into this a lot with people I've known over the years.
Yeah.
They want me to come back and play music with them again. I'm like, you had your chance.
Yeah. You, come and gone, man.
You, too bad, dude. Yeah. I didn't put it down and sit around and wait for you to catch up.
Right.
Like, I moved forward.
Yeah.
So if I go back and jam with people from the past, I feel like I'm taking steps backwards.
Right.
I wanted to move forward, definitely. So that's what I've done.
Well, I think
and that's
what
you've done, it seems. You've never looked back.
Not at all.
And but you've also said you've been with this one particular gentleman for many years, so you all have like a wonderful actual professional relationship.
You know, if I wrote it down in a list of bands, there's probably a couple that I'm not remembering because we did a couple.
It happens to everyone.
Short-lived projects, you know. That,
yeah, but I mean, if it's worth remembering, you'll bring it up. But
exactly.
We all have those projects that you have two or three practices and then it's like fizzles out with no name.
But that was, you know, the last one I did was the Dead Broke Barons, and that was a lot of
that's
you know.
That was a well-promoted name.
Yeah.
Like, you guys were fairly busy.
Man, we got really lucky when we first started because we had...
Now, again, before we move forward, was that the band that came after the one you were just talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd probably taken maybe a year before that of writing. And
you're able to go back and just do solo stuff and write as a solo performer or a songwriter.
Pretty much every break in between a band that I'm involved in, I'm usually
rediscovered
just writing
yourself,
some kind of solo
where you were at that
stuff.
Point in life.
Yeah.
Yep, makes good sense.
But I remember the guy that played banjo for Dead Broke Barons, he was doing a solo thing at the time, and he had a couple of videos on YouTube. And he had recorded this old traditional song called White House Blues.
Oh.
And he really had this really unique take on it. I mean, it was kind of traditional without being, I don't know, sticking to the actual right. formula of bluegrass and folk that mm-hmm. I think, you know, you listen to traditional bluegrass and it's,
right.
you know, you have a formula you have to
there,
stick to.
Yeah,
and there is no branching away from that. And right. I always liked, I was really intrigued by the way that he kind of did his own thing. So Hunter and I reached out to him and we got together a few times and we learned that we did our own thing with that song. Like, you know, he was doing the banjo thing and I brought in guitar and mm-hmm. Hunter got him a stand-up bass, which is just, bass is just the greatest
a world of its
bass
own.
I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, and they're so cool.
I mean, the volume on it alone, you know, you can everything he hits, you can just feel it in your chest. And
I've played a few and I'd have to have time to understand it, but they're amazing.
Oh my God.
To play on, but I would rather sit close near it and let a professional play it.
Right.
And I've done that a few times. I think it's Mike Hildreth that has one that plays out around town.
Yeah.
They were playing one night at 440.
Right.
And I'm just walking downtown. I didn't think about who's playing at 440. I don't know. But the band was playing there. It's Shake Rag, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were playing, and Mike's playing the upright bass. And I just kind of parked my ass on the sidewalk, like, I'm just going to sit here and listen to this band for a little
enjoy.
Bit. I love it. Absolutely. I mean, I just can't get enough of it.
And that was, you know, when we were doing the other folk project we did, the Boat and Float and Dragon Chasers, he played an acoustic, a regular acoustic bass.
Yeah.
So the Dead Broke Barons was the first one we ever did where he played the stand-up. Mm-hmm. So that was a whole new world for me.
Well, musically, the band got a lot of respect.
Yeah.
I know that once you all started playing out and gigging and stuff, the name was common. It was very common to hear that name.
That was the only band I've ever been in where I think I was at Cracker Barrel one night having dinner.
And somebody actually recognized
the waitress
you and shit.
Was like, hey, aren't you the guy from Dead Broke Barons?
Is that
and that
cool?
was a pretty cool feeling. You know.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's so cool. It's a great name.
Yeah.
So does it have any reference to the river or
not
the
really,
lake?
Man.
Okay.
I think it was that was another instance where we had a list of names. You know, we'd been a band for maybe a month at that point, and we didn't really know what to call ourselves. We had a few things that we'd bounced around mm-hmm. that we didn't like.
It's
really,
such a common thing around here how people are so smart about incorporating a road or a piece of property from their like area, their turf, and they incorporate into the band name,
right?
And I always thought that was so well done,
absolutely.
And so many bands have done it. So, being from here, when you hear the word Baron, mentioned into a band name or a song, I instantly think, is that a reference to the Baron?
Maybe subconsciously. I don't think it was. That was actually one of those things where, believe it or not, I had a dream one night that we were playing a big show in front of a large crowd.
And that dream actually came true.
And that introduced us as the Dead Broke Barons. I don't know where that came from.
How wild. That's wild.
I just woke up the next morning.
So this came from you, from the beyond.
Sent the guys a text and was just like, how about this? And
that's
they
a
loved
trip.
It. And we stuck with it.
I love that.
And we kept it for our entirety of being a band.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
The only time I've ever heard any other, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of stories out there like that, but the drummer for Alice in Chains, Sean Kenney, every album, I think the first four albums that Alice in Chains put out came from a vision that he had in a dream.
Right.
He could picture the album cover, and he could title it.
I didn't know that.
Did you not know that?
No.
The most, I first caught wind of that from an interview of him where he was talking about Jar of Flies.
Yeah.
He had a vivid dream of the album title and the photograph on it.
That's awesome, man.
And so when he gets with the person to make the album artwork, he has to be there to like position the face and the jar and the hand. And like, it was really interesting.
That's very cool, man.
Now, the reason this intrigues me so much is because I dream clearly like anyone else, normal person. I don't remember them.
Yeah.
I think the last time I woke up and said, I had this crazy dream and this is what happened, was a good 20 years ago.
Right.
So about 20 years now for my life, physically cannot wake up and say that I had a dream and remember it. Yeah. I don't know why that is. So there's something about when people talk about dreams and dreams becoming reality or the scariness, eeriness of something being so ironic of a dream. I find it intriguing because I'm like, oh, I don't get that. I don't have that.
Well, in most cases, the dreams that I usually remember are the more frightening ones, the kind of the nightmare type of stuff.
Well, that, you know,
that's
sucks.
The stuff that sticks with me. But
see, I'm glad about that part.
In this case,
but
you know,
I wish I had dreams that were like giving me song lyrics and right? shit because I could really use that.
Yeah, that
know?
Would help. Yeah,
that would have been great. But the Dead Broke Barons, awesome name, killer band. I've seen you guys. I would guess off the top of my head, maybe 3 or 4 times live, if that. When did that form, and how long did that go?
It was about 5 years ago. I guess we'd I reached out after we heard that YouTube recording mm-hmm. that Seth Pedigo had done.
Okay,
we reached out to him, and of course, I had worked for his dad for years, so we knew him. And mm-hmm. actually, he's cousins with Hunter.
But you're not done, though.
No, we're still playing.
For some reason, I think I didn't know if you were because recently you played by a solo show.
Yeah.
And
man, it's been.
I didn't know if maybe that was a sign of something.
We took kind of a.
I was assuming
extended hiatus.
You did
in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Well, see, I wasn't crazy then.
No, that was.
But the band's still together.
Yes,
you just
absolutely.
Haven't done much.
We just
lately.
We kind of took a
as
break
we are taping this
and focused on our families for a while.
Great,
because we all have children, mm-hmm. and you know, Hunter is just recently married, and you know. We just wanted to give everybody time to
okay.
enjoy, especially the older we get.
Okay, good.
The smaller
I got concerned
window
for
you have.
For some reason, I was under the impression that it wasn't around because I haven't seen the name.
No. I mean, it has been, I guess, about 2 years since we played out.
That's wild.
But we're still writing.
Has it know. Really been that long?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the last one we did was, we played Tidballs, yeah. We were scheduled to play the Live on the Lot 2 years ago, and then my son was born that day.
Like the day.
So I was in the hospital and just like, you know, I guess I probably could have left my wife and my newborn child to go play the show, but I chose not to.
You know.
So, and a lot of people, you know, jokingly gave me shit about that afterwards. That I, you know, I mean, he was born in the morning, man. You had time. Come on down and play the show. But I was like, no, I think I'll enjoy this moment with my family.
I think you made the right move.
In retrospect, I feel like I really did make the right move on that.
Absolutely.
One,
but, yeah. Good Lord. We shouldn't even be having this conversation. But the band formed about 5 years ago, but you've been on kind of a break because of family and life in general.
Exactly.
But you're not broken up.
Not
you're
at
just
all.
Just taking a break, getting it together.
Yeah.
And
we actually, the three of us got together last night for Darius Barati, the guy that has produced the Lost River Sessions
Lost River
show
Sessions.
We've been on multiple times.
Amazing
He's
show.
That guy is just like, if I've ever had someone be supportive of me as a musician, that guy is number one on the list.
Yeah.
I mean, he is just...
Well, I think that is why the name has been so dominant.
Oh, absolutely.
Lost River Sessions is an incredible show.
It really is.
With the showcasing of what they do. But, of course, they bring in people regionally.
Right.
But he's done a brilliant job of highlighting our actual local talent.
Yeah.
And putting you all on a format, not only on stage, but on television and on the radio.
Right.
To where a bigger, broader audience is hearing you. And you're not sitting there waving the flag of, we're a Bowling Green local band.
Yeah, right.
Like, it actually looks like
you're
from Chicago or Austin, Texas. Like, it is so well done that the band is not looked upon as something it looks like you've won a Grammy.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
It's big.
And we were the first episode. I mean,
yes,
that's I can always have a lot of pride in that. You know, I remember
the guinea pig.
We were having a rehearsal, as a matter of fact, at our buddy's garage, and James Pearson, the guy that had originally come up with the idea, he approached us and said something about doing a local, you know, video recorded thing for PBS. And obviously we were really into the idea,
mm-hmm.
but we never thought that it would take off the way it did.
Right.
I mean, we knew we'd be like the pilot episode, and they had mentioned, you know, if this does well,
it
then
took off.
I mean, people really loved it.
I mean, it's won awards.
I mean,
and it
they've had multiple
them.
Emmys,
yeah.
And that just, to me, that is such a, I take so much pride in being what I feel like a big part of that show, because we've been on
you're
the
a big part of it. You were part of the formation of it.
We've done the TV show twice,
yeah.
And we've done the Lost River Sessions live twice also.
That's so cool.
And the
and
last
I love
one we
the
did,
settings.
We had to play with
like,
Willie Watson.
He's really smart
so
about the location, and like where they used to film on various locations, but then to do it at the Capitol, that's a hometown theater that has got so much history to it. It's so well done.
And being an acoustic band, I mean, you run yourself the victim of having really bad sound sometimes when you play right. like a small club because they're not really set up for
right.
an acoustic band. I mean, it's more they're used to right. band with drums and guitar amps mm-hmm. and stuff. So playing the Capitol, those guys, I mean, they yeah. they really, I've never had an experience like that where
everything
sounded
where
so perfect through the sound system.
The music and the art form is respected
exactly.
going into it. So, yeah. of course, they know exactly what to do.
So it makes you feel like you're, yeah. you know, up there like with Bill Monroe's sound crew or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're just so good at
so cool.
miking acoustic instruments and making it sound yeah. like it should sound.
But
no
clearly,
feedback and all that.
You all were selected and have done the things you've done because of your songs, your
yeah.
talent level. Like, you can't deny what a great band this is.
Well, I felt, I mean, from the very beginning, I knew it was something special. I mean, there's, I've always loved doing acoustic music just because I mentioned before that mm-hmm. it's, you have the ease of not having to carry so much gear.
Right.
And you also,
that's kind
we
of
were
nice.
Able to like busk a few festivals where we could just, you know, stand out in the parking lot and play.
See, that's cool.
For, you know, whoever walked by
right.
us. And you always end up having at least a few
yeah.
people that stop and listen to you and want to know more about you when you're done
right.
playing. And it's, you know, to me, that's always been the way that I've wanted to mm-hmm. get our name out there, because we're not capable of,
it's grassroots,
you know, doing big budget stuff
right.
where we're going to get on the radio or,
well, it's the kind of music
TV.
That
more,
it has to be approached
right.
from a true fan.
Yeah.
Like, that music, it's hit and miss with some people.
Yeah.
Not everyone gets it. But the true fan of the art form and the sound and the stories. Of course,
yeah.
lyrics play a big role in music of that nature. And
definitely.
So you get a lot of that kind of stuff. The art people, the poetry people. You kind of get all the elements.
Yeah.
And then the guys like me that love punk rock and heavy stuff, I still find a lot of inspiration in music like that.
Yeah.
People used to ask me all the time, as a drummer, what I listen to for inspiration. I would be like, I listen to a lot of like soft like stuff. Like,
right.
I was listening to a lot of Alison Krauss for a long time.
Oh,
there's
she's
drums
amazing.
In Alison Krauss's music in Union Station, but
yeah.
not a lot. And it's very delicately done if it's there.
Yeah.
And it was a nice thing to listen to because I wasn't having to tap on everything and
right.
like, you know, it was like I could actually sit back and enjoy
yeah.
listening to music again.
Definitely, man.
So that was cool.
Well, I mean, that's one thing I would say about writing for that style of music, because, you know, in all the rock bands I've ever been in, you know, when you're writing the lyrics, you try to go as out there as you can
yeah.
go, and you're not necessarily trying to make sense with what you're writing, just whatever sounds cool and rhymes. But when you're writing for a folk type band, I mean, you're more drawn to the storytelling aspect
right.
of it. You know, you think of a character that has some interesting backstory
mm-hmm.
and you try to make some lyrics out of that. I think that's probably the only band I've ever been in where I really know what I'm writing about before I sit down with the pen, you know.
Wow.
And that's always, that's a different,
so it's like
style
writing
of songwriting
a short
and it's
story
a lot,
or I guess a short, like
right.
in movie terms they
yeah.
call it a short, where you do like a 10-minute
yeah
story and it literally has a beginning, middle and end.
Yeah.
But it's like, instead of it being a 2.5-hour long movie
right.
telling a story, you can do it in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And so you kind of do that in a song.
And that's what, you know, I think the first song that I ever wrote for Dead Broke Barons was a bluegrass tune called The Dirty Thirties, mm. and it was about the Dust Bowl.
Oh, nice.
And I had just seen the Ken Burns documentary about the Great Depression and the
yeah.
Dust Bowl. And I mean, in that style of music, there's nothing more interesting to write about than
right.
hard times for people
and that's
back
what,
in the day.
That's where a lot of that comes from.
Exactly.
And it's also keeping the history
yeah.
of life.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you don't want people growing up today that don't know anything about that stuff.
Right.
It's like it is kind of a lesson
yeah.
learned and giving some sort of history lesson on things.
Yeah.
But yet you're also telling a story that can inspire someone to do something.
Right.
Write a book or read into it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And discover that your grandfather was out there.
Yeah.
In it, you know, it's like you just never know what something like that can
right.
open a door for someone that hears it.
I mean, my dad wrote a song just for us before we did the last Lost River Sessions called Eli. And it's one of those, it's about a man walking in on his wife with another man.
What were they doing?
And you don't want to know. It's like, I better not talk about it on this podcast. My mom might be listening, so I don't
oh,
want to get
yeah.
too deep into it.
Sorry, Mom.
Yeah, it was...
take care of that.
You start reading into the song, and you start realizing that, yeah, he's going to kill both of them, and that's nothing better to write a bluegrass song about than somebody getting killed. It seems like you go back to the history of bluegrass music, and there's a lot of that.
There is a lot of that.
And I'd like to, you know, put my little mark on that, you know, our song
it's a guy real life with a catchy hook.
Yeah, exactly. And people loved it. I mean, that seemed to be, like, you know, one of our most requested songs. And,
well, there you go.
Yeah.
Goes the show.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's easy to see all the great things that you guys have done because it's been so well documented.
Yeah.
But talk about what you have done normally. Have you released records? Have you released videos? What have you done as a band?
Over the last couple of years, Seth has really dedicated himself to setting up our YouTube channel where he took a lot of footage of old movies and kind of spliced them into our songs. And he's made some really cool things on there. If you look up Dead Broke Barons on YouTube, it's
all right.
Pretty long list of...
That was my next question.
...of nice Dead Broke Barons homemade videos on there. We
and
haven't done anything
you guys
like,
have
officially.
A Facebook page and
yes.
things of that. So everybody can find you guys fairly easily. You're the only band in the world.
Yeah.
These are my favorite band names is when it's the only one.
We checked and we made sure that it wasn't used anywhere else.
There you go.
We do have a Pandora station. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
So you guys are literally all over the place.
So, I mean, we've actually had my wife listens to our Pandora station pretty regularly, and she's always talking about these random bands that
like
pop up
stuff
on our
that's
Pandora.
On there that you were like, I don't know who that is.
I get, you know, get introduced to bands I never heard from just listening to our own
because
Pandora station.
Because they compare it to fitting the mold.
Somewhat similar style, and, you know, that's pretty neat. Because I don't...
Wow.
I guess the older I get, the less... I listen to music, I guess. You know, I spend a lot more time.
Well, yeah, you're really a master of your craft.
Well, thank you.
So you don't, but you're not pulling, I'm terrible about it. I'll go home and listen to 8 records when I should be writing my own
songs. Nothing wrong with that, man.
No, but it's interfering with my writing.
Right.
And now that I'm a writer, it's like, I got to quit acting like a drummer all the time sitting around listening to records.
Yeah.
But I'm in that boat.
Yeah.
So, but no, I think that's good that you're kind of keeping outside influences at bay.
Yeah.
So you'll listen to something if you want to, but not dive into a rabbit hole.
Right.
And just get lost in it and then be like,
I'm always looking for, I mean, there's a couple of bands that I follow pretty closely that, you know, have recently released records that, you know, I'm really into. I mean, I love Tool's new record and Grizzly Bear put a record out recently that I really fell in love with.
Cool.
But, you know, as far as new music that I'm not familiar with before I find it, I mean, that's pretty rare. So I think that's what I love about the Bowling Green scene is the music that I listen to that isn't old 60s, 70s music or maybe 90s grunge is local stuff. I mean,
and we will get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
But real quick, as far as what does the Dead Broke Barons have available out there?
As far as on disc, we don't really have anything. We were
have
supposed
you just
to,
gone strictly digital?
Yeah, basically.
Really?
Yeah, and that's mainly more out of financial strife. You just
true,
couldn't really afford.
But if you were to sum it up, would you say it's what? An EP, a record, a couple of different things?
Both of the Lost River Sessions
you treat them as
that we
sessions,
did,
right?
They gave us the audio so we could kind of
so
release it.
So you just
kind of
put that out there.
Yeah.
It's like a live recording.
Right.
But it's also a live recording well done and professional
beautifully
as hell.
Recorded
yeah.
So we really couldn't do any better than if we went to the studio, so that's the reason to not
like
do
a
that,
lucky
you know.
Man
oh man I mean
how cool
I really can't express enough how much
I need
we owe
the Lost
River Sessions.
Sessions punk series to kick in at some point. We will be the guinea pig for that.
I'm sure Darius would be all about that.
I was doing one of these one night at Spencer's. Who was I talking to I cannot remember who I was interviewing. But he was sitting right across from me at the other table having coffee. And he, you know, we acknowledged each other before it started. And I was really hoping, like, one day I'm going to be like, hey, man,
future
I'm
project.
Not in an Americana folk band, but can we play the Capitol?
Highly interested in the Lost River Sessions.
Yeah, we got a few songs that kind of might fit in with it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I really applaud what they've done.
It's
and
amazing,
I also
man.
Applaud our local television, including WNKY, what Julie's done with Soaky Scene and now Marquee Backstage.
Absolutely.
That's incredible. She is open to
all diversity of music, yeah. which is just great. We've been on it a few times. And
which was a great episode. It was the last
fun.
One I watched was really great, man.
Oh,
the
man.
The Astronauta episode was great.
That was weird for us to be at the warehouse.
I dug it, man. I really dug it.
We don't fit the warehouse. But I loved the fact that we were documented on television at the warehouse.
Because yeah,
it's the only time we'll ever play there. But I love what she's done with opening the doors for so many people.
Yeah.
And you and I can both say that this music scene has always been rich in diversity and great outlets of clubs and press and radio.
Most definitely.
But
man.
We never had television.
Yeah.
Like, if I ever saw a band performing on Channel 13 at midday, it was usually like your uncle and his buddy playing an acoustic thing for a for a benefit show. But now even they kind of have like live bands and stuff.
I mean, we did the Dead Broke Barons did we did midday twice.
Midday,
and the first time,
and it's a trip, isn't it, when you're
really
doing it. When the
great
weather
memorable
things.
Moments was watching Chris Allen off in the backstage area, just like really getting down to our music. I mean,
right.
He's really loving it.
And yeah, he's a diehard music fan. He knows what he's doing about music.
So we have some pretty great conversations with him after the show.
I always thought it was weird to do that shit because the green screen's behind you. Yeah. Or it's like they rolled it up, and I was like, can you just leave it down and put us on like a planet somewhere? But I think it's really come full circle for our music scene because it's literally we have everything we need.
Yeah.
And all of these people do it out of love. They don't have to do it.
Right.
But, like, Julie and with what the Lost River Sessions... So, Marquee Backstage and Lost River Sessions are two things that you cannot deny are... We are lucky.
Absolutely.
To be able to have that opportunity. If you're lucky enough to be on it, then good for you. Otherwise, it's opening a door of fans that would have never seen or heard your band.
Yeah.
And so that's what's really cool about
it. I mean, I've been introduced to quite a few local bands just from Marquee Backstage.
Yeah.
Because I don't really get to... I mean, a lot of the... I blame it on, you know, family obligations to not getting out and seeing shows. But really, it's of just being a natural introvert. And,
yeah. But some bands aren't as good at promoting as others.
True.
And, of course, you can't do the telephone pole... poster hanging trick like you used to. Not that we'd walk up and down State Street looking at flyers, but very few places even let you hang up posters and shit anymore. So it's all on social media now.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to follow certain outlets to see who's playing where. And of course, the clubs are decent about promoting it.
Right.
But sometimes the bands don't promote anything.
Yeah.
They just think you're just going to magically show up knowing that they're playing that night.
I wish it was that easy, man.
Yeah, exactly. But that's kind of the other thing I think that plays a role is how some people miss things or just simply don't know of a band. I have no idea who that band is. I've never heard of them. And yet they've been around for 3 years.
Yeah.
And they play at Tidballs all the time.
There was a couple on there that I'd heard the name multiple times but never actually got to hear the music.
Right.
And, you know, because of Marquee Backstage, I got to hear
it's
them.
It's a common thing.
Yeah.
But it's really cool, and you guys really have been really fortunate, and I know that you've admitted it already, that is just, what a wonderful gift.
We felt so blessed from the beginning.
The opportunity, but yet look at what it brought your way.
Absolutely.
And to be able to take a break, knowing that you're going to come back soon and be able to do it all over again.
Right.
But you really built your fan base, and it's still... being built because these things are reruns.
Yeah.
You know? It's on WN or what is it? Is it WKYU PBS?
Just WKU
television?
PBS.
WKU PBS.
Yeah.
And then the radio station, of course, is the local NPR PBS radio and all that stuff. Is it PBS radio?
Yeah.
88.9. Yeah, 88.9. I don't know why I'm getting mixed up.
Sorry, man.
I'm about to do the call-in, do a monthly donation. But we are, that stuff has come light years from where it was 20 years ago, from when we were kids. None of those radio stations cared about local music. none of the television stations gave a shit about local music.
Yeah.
And now everybody does. And then back then, all we had was the Amplifier newspaper.
Right.
And if you were lucky, you could hang up some flyers in a couple of music stores and stuff. That was all we had.
And, you know, being in so many bands over the years that didn't have that outlet, I mean, it really puts it into perspective when you get to be in a band that has so much exposure from that one, you know, one spot that just keeps...
Yeah.
Without you really giving them much in return, they just keep pushing your name for you, and that's that's a really beautiful thing.
That is a beautiful thing, and obviously, if they're a fan of your band, they're gonna swim through the Arctic Ocean to let everyone hear about it. Like, they will make sure that people know your name and
it's
hear
really
you
felt that way, man. It's, I mean, they've gone, they've been over backwards to do whatever they could to help us. We've gotten a lot of shows that were, we played a couple of actually banquets for the staff of Western.
How cool is that?
And I mean, it's, you know, how else could we ever get a show like that where it's, you know,
and I'm sure in a nice
everyone's wearing
venue
suits
too,
and you know, they're all really paying attention to what we're doing and really liking it, and these are older people that would never reach out and find us online.
They wouldn't go to Tidballs.
Never. So that this is the only way they'd ever hear our band, and then they end up loving us, and you know, that's a few more likes on Facebook.
But that's what's so cool about what you guys do, is it is the type of music and it's the type of band that can float between worlds.
Right.
You can play a fancy theater and you can play a dive bar.
Right.
And it's accepted.
And I love that, man.
You must be on cloud nine, man.
I mean, last few times we played
Are you chomping at the bit to be like, when is this break going to be over?
Man, it's really close. I mean, we got together last night and we're just talking about, I had written, I've got about 5 new tunes that, you know, all we really got to do is get together and put them together.
Well, I caught you briefly from when we're taping this. It wasn't that long ago that I caught you at Tidballs.
Yeah.
It was you and Alan Miller, I think, joined you on stage. So, again, you're kind of, you're able to do this solo thing.
Yeah.
In between things that are happening, but thankfully, Dead Broke Barons is not over.
Oh yeah, no, it's not over.
I guess coming into this, I was kind of under the idea it might have
No,
I didn't get the memo.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, kind of mystery around it, really, because we haven't really been too open about what we're doing.
I'm not following the social media.
We just haven't.
It's my fault.
We've just kind of been on our own, in our own worlds, and just waiting for the moment when it's time to get back into it.
You know, that's good, though. I think you're doing the right thing. Yeah. You're doing what's best for you, and you all are just normal people.
Right.
It's not like you're out traveling the world and touring and all that stuff. But you are doing great things on a local level, and that's hard to deny.
Yeah.
So you should be very proud and happy.
I most definitely
with
am.
What you've built, because you've built a cool thing.
Well, and
now hear your story, that's really cool, of how it has evolved over the years of being from a kid to today.
Yeah.
And you've grown into this world that you built.
Yeah.
You built them all. You didn't really follow the path of cover bands.
I tried really hard
not to,
man. I mean, it's, you know, I think I got lucky to be surrounded by people that were just really creative musicians that brought out the best in me as far as, you know, whatever style we were playing. You know, even when I was in the Phalagistics, the punk rock band I was in, I mean, those guys were just, I could never thank those guys enough for giving me so many ideas when I was, you know, I was, in most cases, I was the predominant writer, but none of those ideas came just from me. I mean, that's all stuff that they kind of put into me just by being around them and giving me all this inspiration.
That's cool.
I feel really blessed that I could, there's 50 people that I could name right now that have really given
me
a lot of influence.
Real quick, just off topic, I know your sister.
Yeah.
When she's not helping do my eye chart, she is a super cool person
to
sit
death,
and talk to. When I see her out, we'll chat for a minute or two, but she too seems to be quite the musically inclined fan, but I also have seen pictures of her beautiful pink Gretsch drum kit.
Absolutely.
So is she also as musically inclined as you, or does she just kind of dabble on the drums?
I mean, she's more so recently. She's been trying to, we've actually been talking about doing a Strokes cover band just for
See, there was
the fun
talk
of it.
About, a, I think it was a Sex Pistols cover band.
Yeah, yeah.
And the lead singer of the Mighty Jabronis was like, I want to do it. And she was like, I want to play drums. And I was like, well, I've got a white bass with a black pickguard. I could be Sid Vicious. And so there was this, like, you know, I don't think it was ever going to happen, but it was a great conversation that we had.
Yeah.
And I was totally, like, on board with it. I was like, I think I could do this. And, of course, it's like, who's going to play guitar? Right. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who wants to play guitar? But your sister is Sheena.
Yeah.
Right. I always want to say Sheila for some reason, but it's Sheena. And I think if anyone saw her... may not know that she's your sister.
Yeah.
She's known for having very...
She's much more well-known in Bowling Green than I am.
Right. She's got very vibrant colored hair. It's usually like bright colored, like
she's pretty outgoing personality as well.
Very much.
Much more so than me.
When I see her, it's so funny. I'll see her at Tidwell's, and then the next day I have an eye appointment, and she's the assistant to the doctor that's seeing me.
Maybe a tad hungover, and, you know.
No, I never see anything unprofessional from her at work. But she's responsible for my vision being very good.
Well, there you go.
So shout out to sis right there. But before we wrap this up, you've had an incredible story. I'm really glad I got to capture that. So thank you for doing this.
So happy to be here.
Well, you messaged me and you're like, I don't know if I should do that. I was like, you should do this. Because I know about now. I didn't know a lot about your past, but I know you. I know what you've been doing. I'm glad you clarified that thing, because I didn't want to ask you going into it. You know, this band broke up. I had to play dumb.
Yeah.
Speaking of local music and local music, as far as Dead Broke Barons go, what is on the horizon? What do you think is going to come out in the near future?
It's really hard to say
whatever.
At the moment. I mean, I know that I actually just have recently joined the Gabagool thing with Shelby Smith, his original
That's
stuff.
That's right. That's you.
Which I'm really excited about being
That's
part
you.
Of.
That's you. You're playing guitar in that.
Yeah, me and Alan Miller. And
see, I just talked
Eric
to Matt DeVore.
Matt DeVore.
I talked to Matt the other day, and I forgot that he mentioned your name.
Yeah.
You are a part of that. I think at first what may have caught me off guard is I know it was Shelby and Matt.
Yeah.
And I knew there was someone else, and I thought it was Alan.
Yeah. Well, we had just Alan
grown
in the mix
like more people. So Gabagool was a Shelby Smith idea.
Yeah.
And you're a part of that.
Well, he had, I guess it's maybe a month ago, he sent me a full length recording.
Yeah,
like
he's
seven
been
songs.
Working on like testing waters with new ideas for about 2 years now.
I was really impressed with it, man. I mean, it's just, he's got a really unique thing going. And as soon as he asked me to be part of it, I was.
Right. And of course.
Honored and jumped all over.
Anyone that's familiar with Vile Jive.
Oh, man.
He was a big dominant factor in musically, I'm sure, in writing a lot of that stuff, which I wasn't in that band, so I can't speak on that. But just off the top of my head, I would think that would be the case.
Well, to be in a band with three of the original members of that group, I mean, it's, you know, that being
which
one of the
you were a big fan
bands
of,
that I was really into in the local scene. I mean, it's a pretty cool feeling.
So you're going to juggle Gabagool and Dead Broke Barons and solo work.
And we're also
so
trying kinda... to get Black Market Peep Show back together.
That's
also
right.
So it should be
now would that just be for a reunion purpose or maybe
I mean it's
let it see what it does.
You know, we haven't put any kind of plan to it. We just as soon as Chris moved back into town we knew instantly that we were going to start playing again.
So you're just kind of sitting back going just whatever happens,
you know,
but
we're going to have a good time.
You're going to be busy
no matter what, and we're definitely going to have a lot of music going
and
on.
You'll always be out doing something.
Absolutely.
That's what's important.
Non-stop.
If you're not playing solo, you're going to be seen with one of these various acts.
Every chance I can get.
That's great. Well, good. Please do. That shows a lot about our music scene.
Yeah.
And the fact that all of that's so diverse, and you're going to be in all of that, too.
That's pretty exciting, man.
That says a lot.
2020 will be a good year for me.
Good.
I really feel like it will.
Well, hopefully 2021 will be great, too.
It'll carry on, maybe.
What's after that? 22.
5 or 6 years from now, I can still be talking about these groups.
Yes.
So.
If the world's still here, you'll be playing music.
Exactly.
We'll just go with that.
You know.
Well, good. So anyone listening to this can look up you personally and discover all of these things that you've been in and all the things that you are in now. Obviously, the big factor, the one that stands out the most is the Dead Broke Barons.
Right.
Something to not only be very proud of and just features a lot of great stuff. You've done a really big thing with that band, and it's been, again, it's been well documented.
Yeah.
So it's pretty easy to find.
Well, I've never been in a band where I could actually go on YouTube and, you know, scroll for a good couple of hours and not get to the end of all the content on there. So that's pretty special.
That is special.
And I've never been a big social media guy, so
I know, and that's what that trips me out. I feel like I do all the work, and then I meet guys like you, and you're like, I don't really do anything. Yeah,
luckily, I have other
show
band
up
members
and play,
that
and everybody
have a lot of passion
takes
for
pictures
that,
and records it.
They take care of that for me, so I can just sit back and enjoy it.
Well, that is so cool.
Pretty
you're
nice
very
place
lucky,
to be.
Man. You're a very lucky man. Yeah. And you're lucky, like me and so many, to be a part of this music scene.
Absolutely.
And one thing I like to ask before I wrap these up is about this music scene and your involvement in it as a fan, which, again, you've mentioned some names already, and you can do it again. But as a fan of this music scene, who are you a fan of, past or present? And what is it about this music scene that means so much to you?
Well, obviously, going back to bands like Valjav and, one of our other first Black Market Peep Show shows, we opened for Double Zero, and they were really great live. I mean, it's, Russell's always been a really great frontman.
The founder of this podcast.
Absolutely.
Russell Brooks.
Thank you, Russell, for
starting.
He's
a hidden gem.
And, recently I've been getting into Girl Tones. They're just amazing. I love watching them.
As we are recording this.
Yeah.
I've seen them the past two weekends in a row.
Yeah.
They're really great.
I really can't say
enough. And I've known Kenzie and her sister for a while. I got to know the family. The Flaming Hots, awesome.
Yeah.
Nobody will ever deny that. But this is on another level.
Yeah.
It is you would not think they are the ages they are.
Yeah.
And the music and the songs and all of it.
Yeah.
When I listen to that, it almost makes me mad. That when where was that when I was 15?
Right?
I thought I was in some cool bands and I had fun, but damn.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Her energy on stage is pretty infectious. Remarkable. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
It's remarkable. And it's like.
Yeah.
I really can't put it into words.
Watching Daddy Sisters. They're just. Really fun to watch and really great music.
Fantastic.
And I've always known the guys from Full Frontal Source for a long time and they're always great live.
Right. They've been a band for a long time.
Yeah, it's been quite a while for them.
And of course, James was in Double Zero the Rabbit.
Yeah.
They just recently had their final show, I guess.
And that was the night that I played.
Yes, that was the
night. Solo. With Alan Miller.
And I told you before we started rolling tape, I was like, I was there. I didn't talk to you.
And it was great.
You walked right past me.
To catch the Double Zero show. I mean,
it was great. And I was really glad I got to catch that because a lot of things happen sometimes, certain shows and things, I don't get to see them all.
Right.
So when I do get to catch things, I'm very happy.
Absolutely.
I was very lucky to be there. And I did see you that night.
I was a little, that's why I mentioned Russell being such a great front man because, being as shy of a person as I am, it's always difficult to take on the front man thing. And when you're doing solo, it's, playing solo is a lot different than playing with a band behind you.
Right.
It's always, you feel somewhat naked and it's all on you. So.
That's true.
I was happy that I got through that without any scars or
awful
voice cracks or anything like that.
No, it was a good night, man.
I felt good about it.
And your stage presence is awesome.
I appreciate that, man.
The way that you dress and the way you approach your performances.
I try to keep some professionalism.
It's very professional. It's very cool because when you walked in here, I was like, where's the suit? Yeah.
I thought about it.
You wearing a hat? What
I
the hell? who else stands out to you? Anything else from maybe the past that...
Have
you been into
do you remember,
pretty much
Nick
everything?
Minow and the Space Dinosaurs?
I remember the name.
That was one of the local groups I really liked. And the Hungry Ears, always liked. And Chess Rockwell was always one.
Yeah. I hear the Hungry Ears a lot.
Technology versus Horus was one that I really
loved. Of course,
loved.
Anything Josh Hines did seemed
that guy is just a machine. He's in so many great bands. I think
he literally is a machine.
We saw Commander.
He's a T2.
I think I was maybe 18 or 19
okay.
when we saw Commander.
Yeah.
And I was just blown away by those
Again,
bands.
These are names of bands that had such an impact on the younger kids because they were good about playing all ages shows.
Yeah.
And he was hell bent to get them, and he did a really good job.
Well, hell, me and my wife were at Q-Time one night, just decided to go have a pitcher and play some pool, and Peter the Freshman was there that night.
Yeah.
And they were great. They played such a great set.
And it's like you want to walk up to him, hey, come on, play some Chess stuff, right?
Yeah.
I was at Riblicker's one night, and they were Peter the Freshman,
Yeah.
And they actually snuck in like three original Chest Rockwell songs, awesome. And nobody batted an eye. And I was like, I told Josh later, I was like, you need to do that more often.
Well, I don't know if I don't know if he may remember. We did. There was a place in Franklin called Burgers in the Square that it had a little benefit for something. I can't remember what it was for. Mm-hmm. But Chess Rockwell played that night.
And oh, cool!
Black Market Peep Show played right before them.
Oh, that's cool.
That was my first time seeing Chess Rockwell.
Wow,
they were just great.
And again, that band. Yeah. Speaking on local bands, I think they're 15 years at this point. Like, I mean, that's remarkable.
It's a lot of music, man.
I don't see bands make it 5 months. So when I see a band that is here for 15 years, it's like, wow.
I've had many myself that didn't make it through like 1 year. So, you know, to see a band last that long is pretty incredible.
It's really cool. And it says a lot about the people involved, you know. And
I mean, that's what it takes. It takes,
when you find the right person.
You got to get along with each other. Yeah. And you got to love doing what you're doing. And they clearly do. So that's
fate.
Something to be said about that.
Well, is there anybody else? Is there anything I've missed?
Man, there's so many. I mean, I think I've named the few that come to mind. The Josephines are just like,
of course,
on a rampage.
Now say it. Oh, see? You said on a rampage. Everybody will say the Josephines are killing it.
Yeah, that's true.
Everyone says that exact phrase. And I'm like, okay.
Well, they're clearly working their ass off.
But the Josephines are on a rampage. Yes, they are.
They really.
The last time I saw them,
I mean, they're such a tight group now. I mean, they've always been tight, but you can tell that the time they spent on the road together is just really incredible.
And they're a good band. I would see the Josephines and Dead Broke Barons being a great show alone for something like a Lost River Sessions.
We opened for them once at Tidballs. It was a pretty great night.
Damn, I must have missed that flyer. I didn't see that.
You know, they brought a pretty big crowd, so we had a great night that night.
Such good dudes.
Yeah.
We're so lucky.
We've known Brad for years, man, and I remember, as a matter of fact, the first Dead Broke Barons show was at a little place, Brickyard Cafe in Franklin.
Yeah, the Brickyard Cafe in Franklin had, like, live music and shit. The one here didn't really do anything.
Yeah. Oh, that guy's awesome. That's where we were last night, man. He's such a Robert Stuper. He's the guy that owns it, and he's just a...
But the one in Bowling Green really supportive, like, didn't make music. It very long.
No, not really.
I don't know why. But food was good.
Brad Tabor, the lead singer for Josephines, he opened for us on our very first
show. Oh, really?
Was incredible. I mean, I was just... His voice alone is just something that you don't hear from anybody else.
No.
He's got his own thing going.
No,
locally.
When it comes to originality, nobody really can put a candle to that, because I've never heard a band. Like, of course, Brad's voice is one thing. That's its own entity. But musically...
Yeah.
They're really a diverse, original band. It's really phenomenal.
You know, we had talked earlier about how difficult it is to be an original band, and they're about as close to it as you can possibly get in the local scene.
Yeah,
I agree. That's why I feel so honored to be from this area, because you're surrounded by people that, you know, are kind of creating their own thing.
Yeah, we all seem to reach out and help each other, and a lot of music scenes have great music scenes, but it's more cutthroat,
right?
Or you got pockets of groups that do things together, and they seem to, you know, you always see the same band playing the same club. It's one of those things. It's very, I don't know. It's nothing. Nothing's like this.
Yeah.
So
we're pretty lucky, man.
Very
pretty
lucky. And you're very lucky.
Absolutely. I feel lucky, man. I really do.
You should. After hearing your story, it's like, wow. Did anything ever bad happen to you?
I mean, I've had it made for quite a few years. Just being
Well, I
by
think
people.
It speaks volumes about you as a person. You're a good dude, and your music is obviously stellar, or
Thank
nobody
you,
would bat an eye at it, you know. So
that's greatly appreciated.
All of this stuff has come your way because you've not only earned it, but it's deserving.
Thank you, man.
So be proud of what you've done.
I'm very proud of it.
Well, we're proud of you.
And, awesome.
Thank you for sharing your story.
Hey, man,
I really appreciate
pleasure.
Your time. And we are at Mellow Mass Music and More, where you cannot buy a Dead Broke Barons CD.
Not right now. Maybe in the next year.
But if you walk in the next 10 minutes, all Village People records are 50 cents.
Yeah, a lot of those.
Well, Shane, thank you for your time, and I look forward to what the future has in store. And everyone, look up anything to do with Shane Johnson, Dead Broke Barons, or all these other bands you mentioned.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.